And I try to indicate to them that I'm doing something for them, you know, to let the world know what's going on about, you know, what's been going on there, you know. So it is, to me, you know, some kind of debt, you know, I can, you know, pay the, you know, back, that's all.
And obviously a lot of American readers and consumers in general, their views of Iraq have come mostly through the military engagements there and from the Americans that have gone over there with the military. But obviously there's a lot of culture that most people don't know about. There's a lot of history that a lot of people don't. I mean, you know, you name the book Euphrates Dance. I mean,
exactly.
It's the cradle of civilization. So is that along with understanding kind of some of what your experience is, you are, it feels like you're trying to bring a fuller understanding of the Middle East and particularly your homeland.
Exactly. Euphrates Dance is an attempt for me to to reveal, you know, the cultures and the culture and the traditions of my homeland, the attitudes, the society interactions, the superstitions, the way it was going on, which is I consider it as a stark contrast to the what is going on for the United States, you know. So this is some kind of attempt. I'm doing it, you know, in order for making some reality of my homeland could be understood and could be appreciated by the U.S. Fellow Americans and the entire Western world.
What are your fondest memories of growing up and starting a life in Iraq?
I have very beautiful childhood. I had that, you know, that memories, and I wish, you know, if you, my second book would be published soon. So we can, the friends and other readers, you know, could find out how happy I was with my childhood. It was, you know, the innocent life. Iraq is a very small community in comparison to the United States. And in Iraq, as a nation, is also a nation and everything. But you could have, you know, a relationship with other people, not necessarily with where you live in your city or your province, but you can have many other friends in Iraq, in Baghdad, in Mosul, in other states. So it is a small community. Encourage you to do some kind of
research
and to consolidate that when, you know, when I grow up and become a professor working in the University of Baghdad and then University of Tikrit, that made, you know, more experience to me the correlation between, you know, the my city as a southern part with the northern part and the relationship that all the people grew up, not necessarily to be in the same religion or the same belief or anything, but this, there are basic things that everybody cling to it and wouldn't leave it, you know. So this is something I really appreciated. It is, you know, United States, you know, it's a beautiful, a great, you know, nation. But, you know, the life is here faster and huge. And so it is the person cannot whatever he tried to do to apply his own experience. You know, the experience could be as a point, you know, in a huge world, you know. So this is amazing, too. I love the United States, but I still have, you know, some kind of missing, you know, my family and everything.
This is KABF in Little Rock. 88.3, the voice of the people in Central Arkansas.
Authors Galore, the Central Arkansas Library System's 14th annual Arkansas Literary Festival, takes place at Cal's downtown campus this weekend. April 27th through the 30th, and admission is free. Arkansas's premier gathering of readers and writers features best-selling and emerging authors from across the nation. The public can attend sessions, panels, workshops, activities, performances, special events, and social gatherings. For more information about the Arkansas Literary Festival, you can visit www.arkansasliteraryfestival.org, email litfest@cals.org, or simply call us at 501-918-3098.
Welcome to part two of a special edition of Primary Sources. I am Matt DeCampbell, and we are talking with authors featured at the 2017 Arkansas Literary Festival. The collection of interviews continues, again from across the country, and often via cell phones. Teresa O'Neill has written a book called Unmentionable, The Victorian Lady's Guide to Sex, Marriage, and Manners. It is a book about the things that women had to deal with on a daily basis in Victorian England, but that everyone was very hesitant to talk about. So here's my first question that developed as I was researching on Amazon some about your book. I noticed that it ranks higher in sales as an etiquette book than it does as a history book. And does that surprise you at all, or is that some of what you hoped to see from this book?
I was fortunate enough that it was published by Little Brown. Little Brown is one of the big six.
Oh, yeah.
Any publishing company you've actually heard of, like Simon & Schuster or whatever, and Random House, they're the big ones. And they're withstanding this change in publishing that Amazon's brought on. Mm-hmm. The thing is, when they tell you to do something, you don't, well, I did not know this. They said, Teresa, we need to put your book in etiquette. I said, etiquette? Nobody reads etiquette. It's a humor history book. I want to be in humor. I want to be with Tina Fey. And my agent, like, kind of leans across. You know, her job is to advocate for me as politely as possible.
Right.
And she's like, Teresa, she's like, I think you're a genius, Teresa, but I do think Little Brown might know a little bit more about selling books than you do.
There you go.
And I'm like, touche.
Yeah.
So they purposely put it in etiquette because they knew very well it wouldn't get any exposure if it was placed up against humor or history, because those are written by celebrities and far established people like Bill Bryson and Mary Roach. So that's why it's there.
Yeah.
It's not really an etiquette book at all. Well, I mean, if you happen to be time traveling to the 19th century and you need to learn how to properly poop, yeah, it's an etiquette book.
Elon Musk will buy a copy once he figures out time travel, and then he can go from there. What, the obvious question, what got you so interested in this topic in this time period?
I'm not a pervert. Not all right.
Not implied. Implied.
It's there. I hear it. Most women, I think, who love historical romances, historical period dramas, stuff like that, even Little House on the Prairie, at some point you're going to be watching Scarlett O'Hara be running across the terra with this gigantic crinoline skirt, you know, that's 7 feet in diameter. And it'll occur to you, wait, they didn't have bathrooms. How did she fit that thing into an outhouse? And that will open a door, like dominoes falling. Like, what? How did they do this? And then you find out that back in the day, until the 20th century, underwear didn't have any crotches for ladies. There was none. They were called open drawers, which had a practical reason, which you'd find in the book. But if that's true, how did they handle their monthly unwellness, as they called it? And all these questions just keep, and the thing was, I couldn't find the answers. Even with the entirety of the internet at my disposal, they weren't there because nobody wrote them down. They were women's issues, and they were very private, and I've read scores of women's diaries. They don't talk about, they always record what the weather is that day, but they never say, I used woolly sheep's lamb and lard to control my menstrual flow.
So then how did you find it then? I mean, did you finally find some women who did write about it?
Well, my biggest resource, his name is Harry Finley, and he's like a 70-something-year-old straight guy who has, for some reason, he is my Elvis. for some reason, he has a museum of menstruation in his basement.
Ah.
Yes, it's awesome. And he is, when people found out he existed, because there's nobody like him,
right?
They send him stuff. They send him first primary sources, which are really hard to find. They sent him, this is my grandmother's 200-year-old crocheted Norwegian menstrual rag holder. This is built from this time. This is how we did this. And he was the source of information. And I was kind of drunk off a NyQuil nap one day, and I wrote him, and I said, "You're my Elvis, and I love you, and can I have some of your images, please, even though I can't afford to pay for them?" And he's like, "Oh, heavens." And he let me have them, so I learned a lot from him. The second place, honestly, catalogs. When the America was getting settled, Sears and Roebuck were the only way really to buy, and Montgomery Ward's were the only way to buy things out here in the West, because mm-hmm. once the train systems got put in. And if you go into the catalogs, they sell all this intimate stuff quietly tucked away, but there's detailed pictures and information, and it all starts to fit together. It's really cool. So that's my primary source of information.
So you're just ripping back the curtain on everyone's romanticized version of Victorian times and realizing that these were still people with regular needs of regular people.
I had to find out, you know, it's just because it seemed so impossible that they could live that life.
Hi, my name is Amy Bradley Hull. I'm here with the Arkansas Literary Festival, and I am here today with author Celia Anderson. Celia is a really, really interesting lady. She's a native of Little Rock, but she's traveled all over the world, and she wears many hats. She's an athlete. She's a motivational speaker. Of course, she's an author. I mentioned that she writes books. She's written all different kinds of books, and she's also a mother, among other things. She's both a fiction and nonfiction writer, and her works appeal to a variety of readers. Her latest book is 100 Things to Do in Little Rock Before You Die, and it's a sort of bucket list for Little Rock. It's like a love letter to the city, and it's got a really interesting presentation of all the intriguing and surprising things that there are to do in Little Rock. And so, Celia, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Oh, no problem. Anytime, actually.
Well, I want to start off with something that many people might not know about you. They might not know that you're a former basketball player. So tell me, where did you play?
Yeah, you know, I started, of course, right here in Little Rock at Dunbar Junior High School. Mm-hmm. It was the first time I ever touched a basketball. But I guess when you walk into a school and you're 5'10", 180 pounds, and you're 13 years old, they don't really give you much choice. And so I played at Dunbar, and then I went on to Hall. We won the very first women's state championship at Hall High mm-hmm. School, and then I played for the Razorbacks all 4 years. And then when I was done at Arkansas, I played overseas in Europe for 2 seasons.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I read that you were in Greece. Is that right?
Yeah, I was in Greece.
How was that?
It was great. You know, I don't know if it was the basketball or the guy I was dating. Either way, I had a good time.
I can imagine. So I know that motivating and inspiring students is a really big passion of yours. So tell me a little bit about the work that you do with kids in schools.
You know, it's really kind of amazing. When I first wrote my 2 fiction novels, people would always invite me to schools, and they wanted me to speak, you know, to their book clubs or to, you know, their writing prompts. And so I would go in and I would be able to touch those students. But while I was there, I was realizing that that population was a very small population of, mm-hmm. of the school. So I decided to come up with a presentation that would appeal to the entire student body. So I have a presentation that's called Game Time, mm-hmm. and it's an acronym for Gaining a Meaningful Education to Ensure Maximum Elevation. Mm-hmm. And it motivates kids to kind of get into the game of life, because I think we always have this debate in schools about whether the problem is the parents, or whether the problem is the teacher, or the problem is the administrators. But we never, ever, ever, ever look to our children and say, you have some personal responsibility.
Right.
You have to participate in your own rescue. And so that's what Game Time is about. It's about telling kids, look, there are 3 things that I think in life that will hinder success, 3 things that I think will ensure success. And if you start right now paying attention to what is going on with you, mm-hmm. even in the 7th, 8th, 9th grade, then you have a better chance of surviving.
Yeah. I think that's a message that even adults could gain from. I think it's a fantastic book for people who are coming to visit Little Rock because, of course, you know, Little Rock is surprisingly cosmopolitan. There's a lot to do here. There's so much to see. And I think people are very surprised about all of the things they can do here, but I think it's a fantastic book for locals also. I mean, I think locals will want to get this book. I was flipping through it. I was like, I never even thought about that. You know, different things in there that I either didn't know about or had kind of forgotten about. So, I mean, I think it's a fantastic book for everyone to browse through. So
thank you.
I'm going to make you make a difficult decision, though, right now. Out of those 100 things to do in Little Rock before you die, you have to pick just one to do. Tell me which one main thing you would pick.
You know, I would just encourage people to get out and to enjoy everything mm-hmm. the city has to offer. I mean, we have the Wish You Were Here postcards mm-hmm. that are down by Junction Bridge. You have the Big Dam Bridge. You have the bike trails. I mean, there's so many things that you can do in the city that you don't have to pay a dime to do. Right. You know, you can go to a lot of the museums are free, you know, so they're just, and even the rep has that pay what you can night,
right?
You know, so there are just so many things that you can do that doesn't cost you a lot. So if I had to tell you the one thing to do in Little Rock, it would be to get out and enjoy the city.
Mm-hmm. Well, Celia Anderson, I think you are a fantastic ambassador for Little Rock for sure. You're a fantastic ambassador for Arkansas authors and also for the Literary Festival and the library system. So we thank you so much for the work that you've done. And thank you for being here with us today.
All right. No problem. Thank you for having me.
Authors galore. The Central Arkansas Library System's 14th Annual Arkansas Literary Festival takes place at Cal's downtown campus this weekend, April 27th through the 30th, and admission is free. Arkansas's premier gathering of readers and writers features best-selling and emerging authors from across the nation. The public can attend sessions, panels, workshops, activities, performances, special events, and social gatherings. For more information about the Arkansas Literary Festival, you can visit www.arkansasliteraryfestival.org, email litfest@cals.org, or simply call us at 501-918-3098.
Radio Cals is a production of the Central Arkansas Library System and its Arkansas History Department, the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies. For more information, please visit cals.org and butlercenter.org. Our producer is Glenn Whaley, and our production manager is Brett Ratliff. Voices by Jasmine Jobe and John Miller. Engineering and editing by Brett Ratliff, Michael Stotts, and Anna Lancaster. Our executive producers are Leanne Blackwell-Hoskin and David Strickland. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Wednesday at 6 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 Little Rock.
Husk will buy a copy once he figures out time travel, and then he can go from there. What, the obvious question, what got you so interested in this topic in this time period?
I'm not a pervert. No, all right.
Not implied.
It's there. I hear it. Most women, I think, who love historical romances, historical period dramas, stuff like that, even Little House on the Prairie, at some point you're going to be watching Scarlett O'Hara be running across the terra with this gigantic crinoline skirt, you know, that's 7 feet in diameter, and it'll occur to you, wait, they didn't have bathrooms. How did she fit that thing into an outhouse? And that will open a door, like dominoes falling. Like, what? How did they do this? And then you find out that back in the day, until the 20th century, underwear didn't have any crotches for ladies. There was none. They were called open drawers, which had a practical reason, which you'd find in the book. But if that's true, how did they handle their monthly unwellness, as they called it? And all these questions just, and the thing was, I couldn't find the answers. Even with the entirety of the internet at my disposal, they weren't there because nobody wrote them down. They were women's issues, and they were very private, and I've read scores of women's diaries. They don't talk about, they always record what the weather is that day, but they never say, I used woolly sheep's lamb and lard to control my menstrual flow.
So then how did you find it then? I mean, did you finally find some women who did write about it?
Well, my biggest resource, his name is Harry Finley, and he's like a 70-something-year-old straight guy who has, for some reason, he is my eldest. For some reason, he has a museum of menstruation in his basement.
Ah.
Yes, it's awesome. And he is, when people found out he existed, because there's nobody like him,
right?
They send him stuff. They send him first primary sources, which are really hard to find. They sent him, this is my grandmother's 200-year-old crocheted Norwegian menstrual rag holder. This is belt from this time. This is how we did this. And he was the source of information. And I was kind of drunk off a NyQuil nap one day, and I wrote him, and I said, you're my Elvis, and I love you, and can I have some of your images, please, even though I can't afford to pay for them? And he's like, oh, heavens. And he let me have them, so I learned a lot from him. The second place, honestly, catalogs. When you know, the West, when the America was getting settled, Sears and Roebuck were the only way really to buy, and Montgomery Ward's were the only way to buy things out here in the West, because once the train systems got put in. And if you go into the catalogs, they sell all this intimate stuff quietly, tucked away, but there's detailed pictures and information, and it all starts to fit together. It's really cool. So that's my primary source of information.
So you're just ripping back the curtain on everyone's romanticized version of Victorian times and realizing that these were still people with regular needs of regular people.
I had to find out, you know, it's just because it seemed so impossible that they could live that life.
Hi, my name is Amy Bradley Hull. I'm here with the Arkansas Literary Festival, and I am here today with author Celia Anderson. Celia is a really, really interesting lady. She's a native of Little Rock, but she's traveled all over the world, and she wears many hats. She's an athlete. She's a motivational speaker. Of course, she's an author. I mentioned that she writes books. She's written all different kinds of books, and she's also a mother, among other things. She's both a fiction and nonfiction writer, and her works appeal to a variety of readers. Her latest book is 100 Things to Do in Little Rock Before You Die, and it's a sort of bucket list for Little Rock. It's like a love letter to the city, and it's got a really interesting presentation of all the intriguing and surprising things that there are to do in Little Rock. And so, Celia, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Oh, no problem. Anytime, actually.
Well, I want to start off with something that many people might not know about you. They might not know that you're a former basketball player. So tell me, where did you play?
Yeah, you know, I started, of course, right here in Little Rock at Dunbar Junior High School. Mm-hmm. It was the first time I ever touched a basketball. But I guess when you walk into a school and you're 5'10", 180 pounds, and you're 13 years old, they don't really give you much choice. And so I played at Dunbar, and then I went on to Hall. We won the very first women's state championship at Hall High School, and then I played for the Razorbacks all 4 years, and then when I was done at Arkansas, I played overseas in Europe for 2 seasons.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I read that you were in Greece, is that right?
Yeah, I was in Greece.
How was that?
It was great. You know, I don't know if it was the basketball or the guy I was dating. Either way, I had a good time.
I can imagine. So I know that motivating and inspiring students is a really big passion of yours. So tell me a little bit about the work that you do with kids in school.
You know, it's really kind of amazing. When I first wrote my 2 fiction novels, people would always invite me to schools and they wanted me to speak, you know, to their book clubs or to, you know, their writing prompts. And so I would go in and I would be able to touch those students. But while I was there, I was realizing that population was a very small population of the school. So I decided to come up with a presentation that would appeal to the entire student body. So I have a presentation that's called Game Time, mm-hmm. and it's an acronym for Gaining a Meaningful Education to Ensure Maximum Elevation. Mm-hmm. And it motivates kids to kind of get into the game of life, because I think we always have this debate in schools about whether the problem is the parents, or whether the problem is the teacher, or the problem is the administrators. But we never, ever, ever, ever look to our children and say, you have some personal responsibility.
Right.
You have to participate in your own rescue. And so that's what Game Time is about. It's about telling kids, look, there are three things that I think in life that will hinder success, three things that I think will ensure success. And if you start right now paying attention to what is going on with you, mm-hmm. even in the seventh, eighth, ninth grade, then you have a better chance of surviving.
Yeah. I think that's a message that even adults could gain from. I think it's a fantastic book for people who are coming to visit Little Rock, because, of course, you know, Little Rock is surprisingly cosmopolitan. There's a lot to do here. There's so much to see. And I think people are very surprised about all of the things they can do here, but I think it's a fantastic book for locals also. I mean, I think locals will want to get this book. I was flipping through it. I was like, I never even thought about that. You know, different things in there that I either didn't know about or had kind of forgotten about. So, I mean, I think it's a fantastic book for everyone to browse through. So
thank you.
I'm going to make you make a difficult decision, though, right now. Out of those 100 things to do in Little Rock before you die, you have to pick just one to do. Tell me which one main thing you would pick.
You know, I would just encourage people to get out and to enjoy everything mm-hmm. the city has to offer. I mean, we have the Wish You Were Here postcards mm-hmm. that are down by Junction Bridge. You have the Big Dam Bridge. You have the bike trails. I mean, there's so many things that you can do in the city that you don't have to pay a dime to do.
Right.
You know, you can go to a lot of the museums are free, you know, so they're just, and even the rep has that pay what you can night,
right?
You know, so there are just so many things that you can do that doesn't cost you a lot. So if I had to tell you the one thing to do in Little Rock, it would be to get out and enjoy the city.
Mm-hmm. Well, Celia Anderson, I think you are a fantastic ambassador for Little Rock for sure. You're a fantastic ambassador for Arkansas authors and also for the Literary Festival and the library system. So we thank you so much for the work that you've done, and thank you for being here with us today.
All right, no problem. Thank you for having me.
Authors galore. The Central Arkansas Library System's 14th Annual Arkansas Literary Festival takes place at Cal's downtown campus this weekend, April 27th through the 30th, and admission is free. Arkansas's premier gathering of readers and writers features best-selling and emerging authors from across the nation. The public can attend sessions, panels, workshops, activities, performances, special events, and social gatherings. For more information about the Arkansas Literary Festival, you can visit www.arkansasliteraryfestival.org, email litfest@cals.org, or simply call us at 501-918-3098.
Radio Cals is a production of the Central Arkansas Library System and its Arkansas History Department, the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies. For more information, please visit cals.org and butlercenter.org. Our producer is Glenn Whaley, and our production manager is Brett Ratliff. Voices by Jasmine Jobe and John Miller. Engineering and editing by Brett Ratliff, Michael Stotts, and Anna Lancaster. Our executive producers are Leanne Blackwell Hoskin and David Strickland. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Wednesday at 6 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 Little Rock.